Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. It's House.
That's just like dumb.
Pope.
Yeah, the Stars are limping in too.
Rooster.
It was a straight up ass whipping.
Milk.
What a loser to play in a minor league park.
And Bison.
Posthumously.
Too good.
All right. Welcome, fans, to episode 222 of SMQBs. The show tonight is being brought to you by our sponsors. Let's start out with our newest sponsor, Supio Software, which provides superior AI for law firms. The show is also brought to you by our sponsor, Assembly, the number one name in case management software, which is used by Pope's firm, Bison's firm, and my firm. And we can attest to the fact that our staffs love this product. And Digital Law Marketing, your search for website, social marketing company that organically generates new clients is over. Digital Law Marketing stands head and shoulders above any other company. And again, we all have experience with it and are really thrilled with their services. And finally, our buddy Milk's company, Injury Board, which is by far the best networking group in the country, comprised exclusively of leaders at the bar. Injury Board can be found at ibinjuryboard.org, injuryboard.org. Speaking of losers, how are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, what's up, man?
What's going on, fellas?
Doing all right. We've got Milk and our NHL buddy Moose here with me at my house tonight, so things may be a little chaotic for us.
Just so you know, House is spelled H-O-W-S-E.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. You guys have been drinking full-fat milk all day, huh?
Why don't we allow those guys over the fucking border?
Unbelievable.
It was really touch and go, to be honest. They asked me what I thought about Trump, and let's just stop there.
Yeah, please.
Here we go.
If you notice, Miller has a little bit of a tan, and he almost got stopped.
Well.
Okay.
Is it July yet, and have we been canceled?
Yes. I was going to say something else about our sponsors, but I don't think at this point they'd want to be associated with this pod, so maybe I'll save that for next week. Gents, how's it going? Hope everyone's good. House, who are you bringing to the bar this week?
I had so many choices, but I think I just to tweak you a little bit, I'm going to bring Josh Harris to the bar because, he's not done buying teams yet. And so just when you thought he's paying attention to the Commanders, welcome to the 2030, will it be the Philadelphia 76ers? Philadelphia has a new WNBA team owned by none other than Josh Harris, because let's see what other teams he can screw up. So we're about to receive another team unlikely to win a championship thanks to Josh Harris. But no, it is exciting. The WNBA, on the backs of Caitlin Clark, has expanded to yet another three teams with Cleveland, Detroit, and Philly in 28, 29, 30. It's going to be exciting to have them, particularly when we open up a new stadium. So maybe we can get Josh Harris run out of town by then. Come have some drinks with me, buddy.
He just brought you another team to Philadelphia. I don't understand. He's got to be the best owner in Philadelphia sports.
He'll mess this one up the same way he's going to mess up the Commanders.
All right. What's going on over there in the Three Musketeers? Who you guys bringing to the bar?
Go ahead, Bill. You're up.
Actually, this one's for Nace. I'm going to bring Washington Nationals GM Mike Rizzo.
Oh, yeah. Well, we might be punching Rizzo later, so.
Okay, because the MLB draft is upcoming.
Oh.
And I would like to know who the Nats are going to pick with the first pick. And if it's not Cade Anderson from LSU, he is a fucking idiot.
Oh. Wow.
Do you agree, Nace?
I do, sort of.
Okay. Well,
we could touch base on that.
Best pitcher in this draft. And if you watch the College World Series, you got to see him directly. If they don't pick him, they're insane.
I think Milk might be too young to remember Ben McDonald.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, I do. I remember Ben McDonald.
And Steven Strasburg.
Are you taking them to the bar or do you have some?
I'm not. You know what? I'm taking Rooster and Milk to the bar for one reason. Because we don't get bourbon in Canada anymore. And because I went to the bar with them today, I got bourbon.
Let's just say we're making up for that problem.
Apparently.
I'm going to take my favorite name in baseball, Jazz Chisholm, to the bar, who, along with Max Fried, is single-handedly saving the Yankees season. And I just love the guy's name, and it's maybe the first time I've pronounced it correctly.
All right.
By the way, guys, I had a chance to go to Rooster's office today, and he has a mural set up for Aaron Judge. I don't know if you've seen it. It's absolutely disgusting.
House gave that to me. It's a cherished gift.
No, I hate it.
It's like building a snowman in his office, just ensure that they won't win anything.
Well, I don't really know who to bring. I've been a little distracted this week. I don't have a lot of good, but I did listen to last week's pod and thought you guys did a great job covering Cal Raleigh. And I want to take him out for a drink, even though you covered him last week and what a tear he's on. But I just think he deserves a drink. So I'm going to take him out and buy him a shot or two.
But Bison, can I ask, not to just go back into all that stuff, because we mentioned you on that. Is it true that this guy is really out of nowhere? Because had you heard of him? Did you know about this guy's talent before this year?
No, I knew who he was, but I don't think anybody saw this coming. Did they?
It's crazy.
I think this is crazy. Yeah, this is crazy.
So as an American League watcher with the Jays, Cal Raleigh has been killing the Jays for 2 to 4 years. So this was not surprising.
Well, his OPS is a good 250 points higher than it's ever been in his career. So I think it's a little bit of a surprise, but let's see. It's fun to watch. It's fun to watch. All right, guys, let's jump into it. Hey, Rooster, we had drafts and drafts and drafts. It's draft season. Let's talk a little bit NBA draft.
I will reluctantly, because I actually am with Milk on this. I'm kind of tired of the NBA. It's over and done with, but I'm going to, what's interesting to me is this was a draft, supposedly a draft of Cooper Flagg and then a huge fall off after Cooper Flagg. I think some teams really did great for themselves and improved their teams. And I'm just going to rattle off a handful of them or less. I love what the Hornets did. The Hornets with the fourth pick picked Kay Knipple. And he's, you know, according to Cooper Flagg and others, he's the real deal. I think he's going to be a real three-point threat in the NBA. But what I really love is they've been trying to trade Mark Williams for a while, and they finally unloaded him and got the 29th pick in exchange. And with that, they picked up Liam McNeely from UConn, who, you know, was hurt last year, didn't really get to showcase his talents. But from all accounts, he is not that far behind Cooper Flagg. And I think they got a steal there. And then again with the 34th pick when they picked the center from Creighton, Kalkbrenner, who is a monster on defense and under the boards. I love what the Hornets did. I think the Spurs really improved their young team by picking up Dylan Harper, who could be an elite player, and Carter Bryant, who is your typical three-point defensive wing. I actually think your team, Bison, did well, the Wizards, by picking up Trey Johnson, who's a solid guy. Lots of people in the know, were saying they think Will Riley is kind of a dark horse, and whoever gets him may be surprised. So you got Will Riley, and then you acquired one of the best vets out there, C.J. McCollum, I think. I love this guy. You got rid of the problem child, Jordan Poole. Look, if your own teammate punches you in the face for no reason at all, you're probably a problem. And Jordan Poole just didn't seem to be working out. And for Pope's sake, I think I got to mention the Mavs. Putting Cooper Flagg with AD, Kyrie, Derek Lively, Gifford, and Klay Thompson. If those older guys are healthy, that is a good damn team. But that is a big if. Couple of teams really stunk it up. How in the world do you have five first-round draft picks and wind up picking five guys that none of us have ever heard of? Well, that's what the Nets did. I don't know any of these people. They're all no names, and I haven't seen one analyst who said, "Oh yeah, you know, if you're really in the know, you think the Nets did a good job." Nobody is saying that. Everybody was also saying Joe Dumars is the man, and now the Pelicans have him making their picks. Look out. He gave away way too much for Derek Queen, who's a good player. I like Derek Queen, but he gave away the 23rd pick for the 13th pick, plus an unprotected first-round
2026 pick, and picked Jeremiah Fears probably about 10 spots too soon. The Knicks only had one pick. You know, they could make a stinker of a pick, and it really wouldn't matter much, and I think they did. They took this guy, Muhammad Diawara, who's a stash project at best, and with the 51st pick, they picked a guy probably rated 80th. So not a great pick, but who cares? With the 51st pick, they weren't going to get anyone good anyway. But anyway, those are the teams who kind of stood out to me. By the way, Mr. Miller here, Moose, has some breaking NHL news that he'd like to jump right in on.
What? We got breaking news. We got the Leafs have traded Mitch Marner to the Vegas Golden Knights. Marner has signed an 8-year, $96 million contract, and the Leafs are going to probably get Nicholas Roy and others to come back in the trade. Now, the Leafs are apparently going after Brad Marchand tomorrow.
He just re-signed with the Panthers, so your breaking news is already behind.
Well, you know what? It broke 11 or 12 minutes ago, and I'm sorry that other people were speaking.
All right, let's go back to the NBA for a minute.
By the way, can I note that the NBA season ended after the NHL season this year?
I think it doesn't. It always they're both too long.
Let's hurry up and get to the NHL so that Miller can stop talking.
Yeah, nobody should talk about how long baseball season is, because NBA and NHL are offensively long. House, do you have any views on NBA? I mean, any views that any of us care about and want to hear?
Well, I think sometimes we overlook the guys at the top of the draft because we just automatically expect they're going to work out. What the Spurs are doing to quietly build this team, like, people aren't really talking about Dylan Harper or their other signing, Carter Bryant, who's a great 3-and-D player. Give the Spurs a couple of years. They are building this team, in my view, perfectly, filling all the holes with all-star talent. And I like what the Spurs did. Rooster warned the Sixers and me, and really anyone who might be in the path of Ace Bailey all day long, to stay away from this guy. And sure enough, despite his demands to land on the East Coast, somewhere between... Basically, he really wanted to be in one of the mid-Atlantic teams. Sure enough, he and his agent kill himself, and he ends up being with the Jazz. I don't think it's a great fit for him there, both in his game and just who he is and what he was looking for. And then he decided to punch his own face for the week by showing up late and skipping out in the first couple days and creating a whole, you know, storm in social media. And finally he showed up there and they unveiled and he said he's happy to be there. But I'm very, very curious to see about Rooster's predictions about Ace Bailey on that one.
So he did actually show up now.
He's there. He showed up
late. And unless he changes the people around him, I think we're looking at another Memphis situation.
Well, you know, during the draft, we were, you know, I was kind of watching and hoping that he fell to Washington. But I'm not so sure that would have been the best thing, actually, after all, especially with what Washington's trying to do right now. So I was pleasantly surprised after the fact that he didn't stick around and that Washington didn't end up with him.
House, I almost added the Sixers to my winners list. I like who you picked instead of Ace Bailey, and I still don't understand why Broom is so low in the draft. I think you got a steal there.
It is interesting. Sometimes we watch these college games and see these kids dominate in both the regular season and the tournament. We just think that their game automatically translates. I was one of those who thought, you know, Johnny Broome is a first round pick in the NBA. How this guy is in the second round and the Sixers got him at 35, maybe I just don't know enough about NBA basketball. I think it's a steal there. Milk, you're the SEC guy.
Why don't you just watch the Final Four game against Auburn? And that should give you some clues. Because when he was matched up against fucking height, like the Gators had, shut him down.
Uh-huh.
I'm just telling you. The Gators shut that guy down in the Final Four.
Well, maybe that is the answer. I mean, maybe that is why he's a second rounder, is that game.
I don't know.
All right.
They'll have to put him on Brunson.
So what's the next big NBA story then? What do we now? I mean, the draft is over. We've talked about it. What do we have to talk about next week?
I guess, you know, LeBron's trying to make himself the story again.
Why, by opting into his contract?
He opted into his contract and then immediately dropped the story that he'd like to play for a winner at a time when the Lakers are sort of standing pat.
Are we still talking about LeBron?
We are.
I don't know why we're talking about basketball in general right now. I don't know. I think we can move on from the NBA at this point and maybe not have to talk about it till October or so, maybe November.
Actually, Bison, I do have a question for you. Why, when you have a chance to have the next Steph Curry, do you trade him to Utah?
Oh.
I'm talking about Walter Clayton. Yeah.
The next Steph Curry.
Why did the Wizards trade?
Talk about too small.
Are you kidding me?
I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
They are going to regret that for the next two decades.
Mark my word.
No doubt that they will regret it. I mean,
two decades.
If you know anything about Wizards basketball, it's that everything they do is wrong. So certainly Clayton will turn out to be the next Steph Curry. I have no doubt about it now. So fair point. Fair point. All right, let's talk a little NHL. We do have a real-life Canadian hiding out in the U.S. of A. right now. We'll try and get him back across the border as quickly as possible. Ice.
I can get Pat back across the border. It was getting in that was a little bit iffy.
Well, we take people who shouldn't be here, and we don't send them back to their home country, yeah. Moose Jaw. So you might want to just hightail it up there before you end up in El Salvador, okay? So, yeah.
I will become a sponsor of this pod to the tune of $25,000 next week if we can get Moose recording from El Salvador. I would do anything for that.
Oh, boy. Oh, God. All right. Moose.
I would like Moose to explain to us why the NHL draft is actually kind of irrelevant. And I'm serious.
I can explain that. It's very rare that NHL first round picks, except maybe the first or second pick, join their teams immediately. Statistically, 50% of all first round picks never play a game in the NHL.
Shocking.
And it's not like the NBA. It's not like the NFL. It's more akin to Major League Baseball. Now, the first two picks in the NHL draft, they're going to stick. There's no question. And the first pick in the NHL draft is a great story. This kid lost his mother when he was 16 years old to breast cancer. And give all the credit to the Islanders. I don't know if you guys noticed. When he was announced as the first pick, he put the jersey on. And they had a purple ribbon already tied onto the jersey that he could kiss. And that was actually amazing. This kid skip part of the combine to go to a hospital in Western New York to be with kids who were dealing with cancer or their parents were dealing with cancer. And he's a great, great role model. Whether he'll be the next Chris Pronger or Denny Potvin, who knows? But he's a great story. Michael Mesa was the second pick of the draft. He went to San Jose. San Jose potentially has the next Crosby-Malkin combination, and that's very rare.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a very bold statement.
That's a big one, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I don't make statements to be bold. I make them to be accurate.
Whoa. Wow.
Just like your finals. Well,
that was bold in and of itself. Now I'm really confused.
First of all, I had Edmonton at the beginning of the season.
Edmonton and six.
I had... The original prediction at the beginning of the season was Edmonton and the Leafs. I had Edmonton winning the cup. I wasn't right, but I had Edmonton in the finals. That's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's not bad.
Anyways,
not bad.
Michael Mesa and Celebrini are two incredible talents. Whether they develop into that, well, time will tell. But you know, when you look at the future and what their prospect is, they could be the next Crosby Malkin to dominate. They are that good, and they are really going to be the bedrock of San Jose Sharks hockey for the next 6 or 7 years.
Wow. All right.
Any comments on the Flyers pickup? Heard that was
I gotta tell you, the Zegras trade was a really good trade for Philly. The only issue I have with Zegras, and I say this with honesty, House, is he another Mitch Marner? Because he hasn't been playoff tested. He's a great regular season player. And I think his skill level is second to none. But can he do it in the playoffs? I don't think he's ever been tested in the playoffs. That's my only concern, because as a Leaf fan, I was happy that Marner has now gone to Vegas. Even though he was 102 points in the regular season, but never did anything in the playoffs.
Wait, you're happy you just lost Marner?
I am happy that Marner is gone.
I'm not buying that.
For Milk to say that I'm not happy that Marner is gone, he clearly doesn't spend enough time with me in dark rooms, because Marner, great regular season, disappears in the playoffs.
Listen, what you and Milk do in dark rooms is on. Keep that on your own time, okay? All right, let's.
But Moose, I do want to ask you.
Very uncomfortable, by the way.
Go ahead,
Moose. I want to ask, relative to the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, where does this number one overall pick land on paper in terms of the strength at the top of the draft and this number one pick?
That's a hard question, because defensemen are always a little different, right? Because you're not looking for a defenseman to come in to lead your team in points and to create and make everyone better. You're looking at a defenseman to come in to prevent goals. And this guy probably can. Is he the next Denny Potvin? I don't know, because Denny Potvin was a once in a generation after Bobby Orr type defenseman. I think this guy is more of a Chris Pronger, who's going to be a great defenseman that will be a bedrock for a team. But you're not going to be able to.
What about Kerr?
Yeah, but he wasn't the number one pick overall.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But you know, defensemen don't lead teams in points. So it's going to take a little time to evaluate how good he is and the pieces around him. He's only going to be as good as the pieces around him.
All right. Baseball.
How about those Jays?
Been very, very good to me.
Well, yeah, we're getting to about the halfway point. I think we're actually just past the halfway point. All-Star weekend is approaching. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. So, you know, it's time to start looking at some of these the standings and thinking about who's going to be buyers and sellers at the trade deadline when it gets here. And House, I think your Phillies might be some buyers, right?
They'd like to. The interesting thing about buyers, and there are Major League Baseball has done some really right things, some really wrong things, much of which has been chronicled on this pod, from, you know, speeding up the game to a ghost runner on second. One of the wins for the Major League Baseball has been how they've slowly expanded the playoffs and made the season last a little longer and be more relevant to these teams still at the All-Star break. And so you got a lot of teams that are going to be buyers, and most all of them are looking for the same thing. It's not really this year is much different than a lot of other years, but most of the teams are looking for pitching at the front or back of the line, you know, of either the starting pitching or bullpen. And so, you know, just starting at home with the Phillies, when they lost Jose Alvarado to an 80-game suspension and the playoffs and not have a closer anymore, I mean, automatically they had a gap that they've tried to patch together so far between, you know, Orion Kerkering and Jordan Romero and a couple of others, Matt Strom. You know, they mix and match. The Phillies aren't going to be dominating in a saves leader at the end of this year, because it really is who's hot and who's pitching well at the time. And I don't see them landing a full-time closer, but they'll be looking for them, for one. They'll also be looking for a center fielder. They just have never been able to really work out the whole platoon of Brandon Marsh and Johan Rojas. And either, you know, Rojas is a great defensive center fielder, but they can get no bat. They're not getting a lot of bat from left field and Max Kepler. So the Phillies will be looking for outfield help and for pitching help, particularly in their bullpen. Their starting five is as good as it gets right now statistically. But there's a whole bunch of teams, you know, here back again, the Houston Astros, right when we think we can write them off because they get rid of some of the talent that brought them, they're right there again, annoyingly. But can the Houston Astros do all of this on the backs of just Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez? Because that's where their pitching starts and ends. They have two pitchers. And so they're going to be looking for a pitcher.
the Cubs, who are playing great, are going to be looking for pitching. You know, like, how long do you put a whole season on the backs of Matthew Boyd and Jameson Taillon? So there's a number of teams looking for pitching. The Mets have absolutely no relief. They have no left arm coming out of the bullpen. The AL East is going to be really fascinating because the Yankees cannot – they have a bunch of pesky teams behind them. And the Yankees are going to need an infield bat, I think. I just think that if you're Rooster, I don't know that LeMahieu and Oswald Peraza does it for you. So you're going to need something in the infield. If you're the Blue Jays, you're going to need pitching because Bowden Francis and 50-year-old Max Scherzer aren't going to do it for you. But the Rays are really an interesting one, right?
Yes, I agree.
Finally,
the Rays are interesting.
They're aroused.
They're halfway through the season. They're only two games behind the Yankees, and the guys just.
I thought for sure you were just going to not mention them. But
Rays are fascinating. They've got a total payroll of $700,000 for the whole team, and basically they're basically knocking on the door of first place in the Yankees with Ha-Seong Kim and Shane McClanahan.
But what do you mean they're not playing? They're out.
I know. That's what I'm saying. That's why they're buyers. They have to be buyers, but with what? That team doesn't buy anything.
But House, I got to ask you something about the Rays here. I think there's a not 0% chance that Pete Fairbanks and Zach Little get traded.
I would love for Little to be traded. Goodbye. Yeah,
he's
I
probably gone.
Never see you again. But Fairbanks would be a tough loss.
But he might go. So there's some teams that are interesting because they're kind of like right there, but they still may give up. I mean, like, is it possible that the Cardinals trade Nolan Arenado? Maybe
it could happen.
It could happen. Is it possible that they trade Steven Matz, a left-handed pitcher? How about another team that might be selling? I want to come back to two teams in particular, but what about the Diamondbacks? Yeah. The Diamondbacks are five games out of the wild card and, 2 years removed from the World Series? They could blow up that team. Sorry, Nerdarami, but they could really blow up that team and start over, which that would be quite a turn. And then the other one is the Orioles. You know, the Orioles, same thing. A year or so ago, they looked like they were building to be in the playoffs, you know, for a good long run and challenge in the AL East. And I think they could blow that team up, which, by the way, House, might inure to your benefit because I think Cedric Mullins is a great outfielder. And if the Phillies need outfield help, I would keep an eye on him.
No, I was going to throw Boston into the mix. They've already started the dismantling of that team. Why not just keep going?
I mean, what are they doing? I mean, that's a tough one to even understand, right? We've covered that whole shit show.
By the way, the Rockies might not win 40 games this year.
Yeah. I know.
They've got nothing to sell and no reason to buy, so we can just scratch that team off. But
is there a possibility that Paul Skeens gets traded?
No.
No. Just can't see it happening. Not if you ever want to put people in those seats for a long, long time. That would just I think all of baseball would be disappointed for that to happen. It would be that what's the point anymore of any of these teams that are small market picking the best player at the top of the draft if you just can't keep him beyond a few years? That would be devastating.
Yeah. Their leadership needs to commit to him. And you got to do something. I'm sorry. If the Rays can compete as the 28th ranked payroll, not just compete, but maybe take the AL East lead. Do something. I mean, it's just like you have the best pitcher maybe in MLB, arguably for the future at least. You got to build a team around him. I don't. And can we talk about the Mets for a minute? Did you see what happened to them this weekend?
They gave up 30 runs to the Pirates.
They scored 4 runs against the Pirates in 3 games.
Yeah, closed. They closed the locker room last night and had the whole meeting. They've lost 13 out of 18. They are in a tailspin. They have real, real problems with their pitching. Their starting pitching is mid at best. Their relief is horrible. And once you get through the top four of their lineup, which is as scary as anywhere in baseball, to be sure, once you get past the top four, it's really, it's truly a bunch of AAA players that are not ready for prime time. So the Mets, they've got lineup problems. They've got pitching problems.
And they're the Mets.
And they're the Mets. I mean, they're going to be, they're going to be aggressive buyers, I think. They will. I thought the point about the Orioles is really interesting because technically the Orioles, I mean, not technically, they are. They're 6.5 games back from a wild card. And although their record isn't great, they've been playing a lot better lately. I would be really surprised if that team throws in the towel already because, you know, they didn't have the same success they had last year. I think if they start, you know, to just get a couple more wins in the next week and a half before the deadline, I think they become buyers and not sellers. So we'll see. And I do think that the Diamondbacks is another really interesting. They have some really, really strong pieces to sell if they decide to blow it up. But again, they're hanging around too. So I think the trade deadline is going to be really fun.
Right. Well, and if you think about it, some of those teams that are hanging around, those are the ones that have the assets to trade, right? I mean, the Pirates don't have a lot to give up. The Rockies don't have a lot to give up. So you got to look at teams like, you know, like Arizona, that's kind of right there, that they got some guys playing, but they're the ones who have the most to give up. By the way, for all the shit talk about Juan Soto, you know, he's back the 12th highest OPS in baseball. So just keep an eye on where he finishes the season there.
It's unbelievable how much you defend him.
Too little, too late.
Did you say the 12th highest?
Well, yeah, he started off shit. I mean, he's flying up there. So anyway,
we're talking about top 12 now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just said keep an eye on him, see where he ends up
for a guy who makes $800 billion a year.
Milk is the 14th highest lawyer in Tampa. So let's go. Let's do it.
That's right. I mean, let's top 12 is now.
Yeah. You guys collectively, the biggest group of morons I know in my life. Collectively. It's unbelievable. All right. Who's got a punch?
It's this week's punchable face.
I got a punch.
A lot of punches.
I think a bunch of us have the same punch. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, all right. I got a punch, and I'm going to punch my own team. I'm punching the Nationals because these guys – so, you know, all these teams – first of all, I give everybody in baseball a punch for wearing, you know, like logos, like ads on their jerseys. I hate it. I think it's minor league stuff. Don't do it in the majors. But the Nats are one of, like, the last five teams to not have a logo or a sponsorship on their jersey. Well, they finally got one today, and they had a big press conference, and they announced it. The AARP.
Oh, my.
you cannot make this
That's
up.
Unbelievable.
They literally will be wearing AARP on their sleeves for the rest of the season starting tomorrow night.
Just excitement what and making you want to win.
The entire marketing theme around the team has been next gen Natitude because we got all these young players. So naturally, they went out and got their first jersey sponsorship from the motherfucking AARP. You cannot make this shit up. This is some Dan Snyder bullshit. Good job, learners. You get a punch.
Wow.
All right, I got one. You know, we have our standard punch, and then sometimes we have a milk slap for things that are less egregious. I am now introducing something more egregious than the punch, which is the rooster black hood over the head, throw you in my trunk and take you down to my basement for a little while treatment for the fan, the White Sox fan, who decided he would taunt Kettle Marte.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Screaming at him that he was messaging Marte's mother, who he knew had died in a car wreck in 2017. At the next pitching change, Marte came into the mound and was bawling like a baby because this guy upset him so much. I just think that baseball, sports, the society in general needs to take a stand against these losers who have no life and go to events, political events, sporting events, and think that they can hide behind the wall, the outfield wall or whatever, and say these things to people who, if they had said something like that to this guy on the street, would have gotten their ass kicked for sure. But they're such cowards, they go to public spaces and do it thinking that they're protected. I for one would like to see other fans take care of this in the stands. And if you see somebody doing that, throw the guy over the wall so that Martel can deal with him face to face.
Yeah, Rooster, I'm glad you said that. Because that's what I was thinking. Why are people letting this go on? I mean, is there no sense of like dignity? Like nobody's going to stand up and be like, bro, enough. Like that's you're crossing
so
the line.
Over the top. It's just unacceptable.
Yeah.
And, you know, families are there with children listening to that crap.
Yeah. 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 That's a punch for sure.
That's a definite punch. I've got a punch which will turn into handcuffs and a milk slap. My punch is for Malik Beasley, but I won't need to punch him because I think the handcuffs will take care of that. If you haven't heard the reports about him throwing games and actively betting on games, and if you need to watch is a couple of these clips when the spread was 8.5. And Beasley was on the court down 9. The game was way over. There was 4 seconds left to go in the game. And off of a free throw rebound, he sprinted down the floor to make a 2-point layup. So the cover was there. There's all these kinds of clips that are coming out now. I think he's in serious trouble. And I don't think we're going to be seeing Beasley play in the NBA. And we'll see if this guy even goes behind. This is going to be one of the more serious gambling issues we've heard about in basketball in a long time. My slap is going to turn into a punch if the NCAA and CBS and Warner Brothers Discovery turn the 64 team, I guess 68, into 76. What's going on with the NCAA tournament and just letting anybody who can dribble a basketball into the tournament is getting out of control. I mean, what is there, 300 and something teams? And to let in almost, we're closing in on a third of the teams are going to make the tournament. Like, what is the point?
They're going to have a bracket for the online teams.
It's just... It's crazy. And all of this is money because CBS and Warner Brothers Discovery hold the rights to the tournament. And the more games they can play, the more ads they can sell, the more money that can be made. But, you know, at a point in which the NCAA is just under so much scrutiny for everything else, like NIL and the transfer portal and all these other mega conferences, why not just keep the most sacred part of the NCAA sports, the 64-team bracket, leave it alone? It is a winning solution. All you're going to do with 76 teams is you're going to put Chaminade in the tournament. They're going to lose by 30 in the first round. Once every 30 years, they'll get an upset. And so, like, what? So these kids can, you know... It's just dumb. It's so dumb. And I really hope the NCAA avoids the full-on punch from the SMQBs and doesn't go through with this rumor.
So, House, I just have one question. The tournament kept expanding. Why is 64 the right number?
I mean, I do think that over time – no, I mean, it's a valid question. It's a valid question. I do think that over time, the mid-majors came to play. It was no longer just – the Big East and the SEC and the Pac-12 and, you know, all the Southwest Conference and all of those, the mid-majors came to play and it made sense at that time because they could actually compete. And I guess you could make that point like, all right, well, so what's the big difference between 64 and 78? I just think that we've reached a sweet spot for a long time that 64 has worked. It's been a winning solution.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, but when Chaminade beat Virginia with Ralph Sampson in that Maui Classic, it was headline news everywhere. So that once in 30 years, isn't that what we want? I'm just putting it out there to you.
But we still get those. We still get those upsets, right? I mean, we had UMBC beat Virginia in the first round a couple of years ago. There's always a big one.
George Mason, you're going to have a Loyola, and that's fine. I just think what we're seeing of late is that, you know, chalk prevails. What do we have? Last year was, do we have, I think we had 4 number ones for the first time in a long, long time. So, you know,
yeah,
I'm not for it. Maybe I'm just old school. Maybe I'm showing my gray hair. I'm not for it.
I'm with you.
I'm just throwing it out there. I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
All right. Any more punches? Who's got a lasso?
I have a lasso following up on my punch. In the very next home game when Kettle Marte returned to Arizona, The Diamondback fans gave him a standing ovation, and a fair number of people in the stands were wearing T-shirts they had made saying, Kettle is my MVP. They just treated him like a king. It was a nice gesture, and the league went on, I think, to ban this fan from all stadiums.
Yeah. All right. Good. Good one. Any more lassos?
Yeah. What my lasso goes with the first pick by the Islanders, Matthew Schaefer. Matthew Schaefer, at the age of 18, demonstrated humility and empathy when during the combine, he left the combine to go to a children's hospital to deal with kids who were suffering from cancer because he had lost his mother when he was 16. And this kid is acting like a 30-year-old when he's 18, and he deserves a lot of credit.
It's a good lasso. Nice job, Moose Jaw. You could come back sometime. All right, any other lassos?
He finally sobered up.
I'm not so sure about that, but all right, who's got a buzzer beater?
I have a pour out for a buzzer beater. Is anyone,
let's do it.
Anyone I got a couple. Want to talk about the Cobra?
You could do it. Go for it. I got it. Some buzzer beaters, but you go ahead and do the pour out.
Well, I just think Dave Parker, who died this week at the age of 74 from complications of Parkinson's disease, is one of those older superstars that is underappreciated in modern baseball. And I would throw guys like Orlando Cepeda and even Frank Robinson into that category where people just don't remember how great these guys were. Dave Parker was a five talent guy. For a big, huge dude, he was fast. He could hit with power. He could hit for average. He could run. And he had a hell of an arm from the outfield. Moose and I were talking earlier about the 1979 All-Star game where he threw Jim Rice out at third base by throwing a frickin' bullet from short right field to third base. There were a lot of plays. If you put him into a search on YouTube where you're going to see him throwing guys out from the wall in right field all the way to home plate on a line. But, you know, he was just amazing. He won the World Series with the Pirates and the A's. He was a two-time batting title winner. He was an MVP and just a really a great player. In between 1975 and 1979, he threw out 72 runners from the outfield. That is a lot. And, I think do yourselves a favor and go back and look at some Dave Parker clips. He was amazing.
Yep. Over 40 wins above replacement. So that's some pretty good chops. MVP, Hall of Famer, 7-time All-Star, Home Run Derby champ, 2-times World Series, 3-times Gold Glove, 3-times Silver Slugger, 2-time batting title, and an All-Star MVP. I mean, that's pretty wild stats right there. Yeah. I mean, he is a forgotten great.
A guy you rarely hear about. And the sad thing is, his Parkinson's was so far along, he didn't even realize that he'd been elected to the Hall of Fame, and he's going to be inducted in like 22 days and didn't live to see it. It's too bad.
Yeah. No, that's a good pour out, Rooster.
I don't know if you guys know just how much DK Metcalf and Jalen Ramsey hate each other, but they are now on the same team on the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers have made some crazy moves in the offseason with some crazy personalities, not the least of which is Aaron Rodgers. So Aaron Rodgers quarterbacking and strong personalities like, you know, DK Metcalf and Jalen Ramsey, they have a stocked defense. They did, of course, move Minkah Fitzpatrick as part of this trade, but Steelers are going to be a very interesting team to watch next year. I think we all predict that they'll do what they always do and finish a game or two above 500, then Aaron Rodgers will shit the bed in the playoffs. But they went from a basically a non-story to a very interesting story. So there's the one buzzer beater. The world of soccer is playing out like I mentioned last week in the Club World Cup, and most things are holding to form such that talk about chalk that we're going to see, you know, the best of the best between, you know, Juventus and Real Madrid are about to play one another, and PSG and Manchester City and Chelsea. Well, today, the sixth best team in Brazil, Fluminense upset Inter Milan, who was in the Champions final against PSG. So you are still going to have those crazy upsets, but it's really fun to see what's unfolding here. Interestingly, a side story to this is that while teams are buying as this transfer window is open in world soccer, there's a lot of money involved in this Club World Cup. We're not seeing so many people in the seats, not nearly as many, I think, as FIFA would like to see. But the further you go in the tournament, the more money that you make, and these clubs are going to benefit from it on the field in the regular season, in their you know, regular league. So that's kind of an interesting story. And in the CONCACAF Gold Cup, which is basically the Continental Cup for the Americas, the U.S. survived a scare last night against Costa Rica and will now face the upstart Guatemalan team, who beat out, yes, Mooses should be awake now, Jesse Marsh and Canada. And what a deflating, unbelievable upset loss. Like, Guatemala hasn't won anything in like a century, and they beat Canada and Jesse Marsh last night. And so now it's USA versus Guatemala, and then they'll likely face Mexico in the final.
I'm sorry, I fell asleep.
It's okay. Go back.
I think you're stuck with me too. That's it for me on the buzzers.
All right, I got two buzzer beaters. I'm going to do a homer one. I did punch my team once, but do you know that yesterday James Wood became the first player since Barry Bonds in 2004 to have four intentional walks in a game? He's 23 years old or so. He has the fifth highest OPS in baseball right now. And he was intentionally walked four times at the age. He might be 22 years old, four intentional walks. That's pretty wild. And then the other one, it's a little more serious and maybe could be a punch, actually. Other than Moose Jaw, who knows what the e-bug is? Moose, go ahead. What's the e-bug? It's like a
fifth grader. That is the person that is assigned to be the essentially the third string goalie for a hockey team. If the first two goalies go down, there is a third stringer in the dressing room that's always ready to go. And it can be anyone from a Zamboni driver to a university goaltender to anyone who has some hockey skill as a goalie.
Good job. You failed to answer in the form of a question, though, so we will have to go on to someone else. No, it's the e-bug. You're right. It's the emergency backup goalie. But, and Moose, I think I might be able to break some hockey news that you don't even know.
Ooh.
The NHL is putting the finishing touches on a revised collective bargaining agreement that'll go into effect at the end of the 26th season. And in addition to having changes like a bigger pot of money for the players in the playoffs and 84 games, it's doing away with the e-bug because it's going to mandate that every team have on their roster somebody identified as their emergency backup goalie. So you're going to have a third string goalie on every team. He's not going to be eligible to play in a game unless the other two go out.
That's a big punch.
So I have a friend who I've told you guys about, who's a hockey agent, former associate counsel at the NHLPA. He's opposing this so that I can be a knee bug.
All right. Okay.
One for that too.
All right. I've got a couple.
Okay.
First, did you guys hear today the fastest serve ever given at Wimbledon happened?
No.
Giovanni Paricard, the Frenchman, of course. Do you know how fast he served today?
139 miles an hour.
153 miles an hour.
Come on.
Yeah, that's miles return. Per hour. That is, by the way, absolutely insane.
Was it returned?
Yeah. And second one, I want to give props to the GOAT, Tom Brady. Apparently he's still throwing TDs out in Venice, Italy this weekend. Props to him. If you know, you know.
All right, good show, guys. Moose Jaw, nice good to show. See you south of the border. Good luck getting home.
I can get home. I just trouble getting down here.
We'll keep our fingers crossed for you. Have a good week, guys.
See you all. Bye, guys.
Go Birds.
Later.